Here we go. Welcome to episode 4 of BP Wrigleycast, a Cubs podcast that looks at the game from both the analytical and the fans' point of view. Today we're going to cover, there's a lot of stuff to cover, and with me I'm Carlos Portocarrero, and with me today I got Isaac Bennett, Joel Reese, Ryan Davis. Let's get right into it, guys. Let's start with big news of the week. Dexter Fowler is back. You didn't get the email? Come on.
I haven't heard anything.
Joel hates baseball.
I thought this was a Bears podcast. Waiting for us to get to Jay Cutler for 3 weeks now.
So Dexter Fowler's back. Chris Coughlin is gone. We have to start with Ryan, because Ryan last week was trying to convince us that Chris Coughlin had no place on this team. Turns out he was right. So, Ryan, you get to kick it off. What are your thoughts on Dexter Fowler coming back to the Cubs?
Well, I was the one who was advocating bringing Fowler back from the longest point, if you guys remember. I thought it was interesting what happened with Coughlin, especially after I basically traded him last week. But I'm a fan of it. What do you guys think?
I think you're a jerk, is what I think.
That's kind of a separate topic, though.
Not just because
that's next week's episode.
Well, in general, I mean, yeah. All kidding aside, and I'm not kidding. Ryan's a jerk, but Fowler over Coughlin is an easy choice. So you bring Fowler back in the grandeur way that they did, and I was thrilled. But that being said, Theo trolled us for about 10 minutes when he just traded a huge part of our team, and you can go look at my Twitter timeline. I reacted very professionally, I promise.
I think what's interesting is that if you, and people talk, I saw this on Twitter too, is that people said, taken in a vacuum, that was a pretty bad trade. But then we talked about it, and it's like maybe, there was like, well, here, we're going to give you Chris Coughlin and for a little under market value, but let's kind of keep the lines warm for something down the road. do you guys think that is kind of an unspoken thing? Because taken on face value, that wasn't a very good trade for the Cubs.
No. I mean, I'm laughing, but Billy Bean, you can't, like, you're not going to keep the line warm with him. He pretty much fell asleep and fell into the pool once. I don't think he's going to do that again with us. But I didn't love the Coughlin trade just from the fact that I can't find anything about Aaron Brooks that I like. He's pretty much gotten hit really, really hard anytime he's come up to the majors.
That's what's so confusing. So then why give him away for a guy who had such a good season?
I just think that he probably called 20 GMs in the span of about 2 hours, and nobody was ready to make a deal or give anybody up for Coughlin, so he just chose the best guy somebody would throw at him, and it happened to be Aaron Brooks.
Do you think he does that move because if you do it after the Fowler announcement is made and that's public, like, you just lose, like, you couldn't put together a better deal after that?
My theory is called somebody he has a good relationship with and made the trade just as quickly as possible. It is possible, like Isaac said, the best deal, but I feel like you probably find something better than that for Coughlin, even in a short amount of time, unless you're really just motivated to dump him on somebody you have a good relationship with, who you might be thinking about.
So we all like the Dexter Fowler move. Fine. Good job, Theo. Pat on the back. But right. This Coughlin trade, you know, even if you take it out of the vacuum and you put all the context into it, yeah, they had to make this trade. He had to do it really quickly because Fowler was coming aboard. Still, not a good trade, right?
Well, let's look at this from the human element for a second, okay? Coughlin has made huge strides in the last 2 years. He's become a pretty good player. But suddenly he found himself in a Wellington Castillo type of situation here where he wasn't going to get enough playing time to build any value on the market. And I think Theo maybe learned a lesson last year with Wellington Castillo. Rather than carrying him on the roster and trying to build value, instead he sort of did the right thing for the player and didn't leave him just in purgatory on the bench forever. And instead, he's sending him into a position where he's probably going to start. And I think that's probably best for Coughlin. It might be best for the clubhouse so they don't have a legitimate starter sitting on the bench all the time. I think that has something to do with it.
Yeah, I just think it is a little weird that, I mean, I think we probably will never hear the name Aaron Brooks again unless we're talking about the Bulls' backup point guard. I just don't see him. Or the former New Orleans State quarterback. correct?
He was good.
Yeah, he had an arm. But I don't, I just don't, I think it's a little weird, but, you know, I'm willing to, you could count the number of, like, really bad moves that Theo has made on one hand. So I just, you know, caught him slack and figured for whatever reason it was the best he could do, and we got Fowler, so I'm good with it.
So now Fowler's here. He's going to play center field most of the time. Hayward goes back to his natural right field. You got Schwarber on left. Jorge Soler. I mean, I've seen all the different calculations people trying to make on how many starts there are in the outfield and how to shift them around, getting Schwarber into catching sometimes, DHing the games over there as a DH. And if there's an injury, fine. Everything resolves itself. But if nobody gets hurt, is this going to be an issue having four starters for three spots?
Well, I'm going back to where I was last week, and this is embarrassing, and I had to eat a lot of crow and deal with a bunch of jerks, but I'm not sure they view Jorge Soler as a starter on a competitive team right now, and I think that has a lot to do with this as to where he's an outstanding bench bat. I think you can spot start him, and he's going to do some really exciting things. But for today, I think that they view Dexter Fowler, Jason Hayward, and Kyle Schwarber as their starters, and I think they pretty squarely view Soler as a fourth outfielder bench bat.
I don't know if I think that's true. Like, I don't know. I just know that they have raved about him. And I know that's like a used car salesman is going to say, this is the best car you'll ever drive. Like, you're never going to hear Jed Hoyer being like, well, this guy, we think he's mediocre, you know. But they rave about Soler. And, you know, he's over. I mean, I was thinking about this a lot. And I was thinking that it's funny. Soler has, like, you can look at the fact that he, you know, he's spent time away from baseball after defecting. He's moved quickly between levels. He's had injuries. He's, what, 23? He still put up a slash line of 268, 325, and 433, which, you know, that's kind of amassed over 500 at-bats. So that's what my thinking was, like, if you look at, I think everyone is pretty bullish on Chris Bryant. I think that's fair to say, yes. But you can also look at him. Some people have reservations because, oh, his BABIP is unsustainable, his K rate is too high, his contact rate is too low. But I think everyone still is bullish. And so I think you can look at Jorge Soler and you can look at negative numbers, which, you know, you've pointed out quite well. but I mean, pointed them out thoroughly, I guess. But I think Ryan and I think we netted out in the same way. Like, maybe it's just kind of maybe an intangible thing is that I look at his numbers and I see a guy who's going to improve.
Yeah, and I feel the same way about Soler. And I actually have a piece coming out tomorrow about Soler and contact rates and how overall he's actually very similar when you took it to Dexter Fowler. So I think that his outside the zone, he swings way too much outside the zone. It's very bad compared to the zone.
Yeah, I mean, what I was going to say is the one analogy that I draw to this move is I think a lot of people looked at the negative of, oh, how are you going to get all the playing time here for somebody like Soler to develop him and to get him up to whatever his potential is. But the analogy that I like to look at this through is when you bring seven starters into spring training for one or two spots and there's so much competition and everybody kind of already knows, hey, you're not going to get through a full season with five starting pitchers. This is kind of the same thing. I mean, without this move, your backup center fielder was, you know, they were going to use Javier Baez. Okay, well, cool. He's never played there. He played four games in winter ball. Spring training is spring training. But this kind of gives them some insurance if Soler does get hurt, if he has health issues, or if they just want to play him a little bit less so that they can keep him healthy. That's one. Then there's Almora, you know, who he might be ready this year. He might not be ready, but this way they've got that position covered this year. They've got an option, which, you know, probably won't sign Fowler for next year, but you never know. I was dead wrong about him coming back this year.
Yeah.
And if Almora is ready next year, he's ready. And you just pay Fowler the $5 million or whatever, and then you've got your center fielder covered.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And don't, you know, Schwarber will be probably not seeing a lot of time against lefties. Schwarber will also do some time at catcher. So I think that, you know, Madden is that king of the never-ending chess moves, so I think that he will, you know, he will Frankenstein a way to make this work. So I guess my one reservation is that maybe, you know, Soler, I know, Isaac, you're not quite as bullish on him as I am, but I wonder if, you know, if he is platooning, I wonder if part of the problem is that he hasn't had enough experience, and I think if you're platooning, maybe do you take away the chance for him to kind of get into a groove? But again, I'm going to trust Madden. You know, he knows much more than me. I know that's I'm going out on a limb now, but yeah, I think that he'll make it work.
Well, this is getting construed as I'm not bullish on Soler. I think that I don't believe he's an MVP candidate like some people thought he would be, but I still think he's a good bat, which I think he'll get playing time. I think he'll get a fair bit of playing time, but at the end of the day, he just went from the third outfielder to the fourth outfielder, which is a little bit irrefutable, and it's now how do you get him in, because you've got the three lefties that are all going to play against righties most of the time. So I think Soler starts pretty much every game against a lefty and then occasionally gets spot starts against a righty, but I don't think it'll be all that often. So I definitely think he's been relegated to a pretty clear fourth outfielder spot.
You know what? I have a question for you guys, because as I was kind of thinking about all this stuff, preparing for this episode, I had like a moment of wait a minute, Carlos. I was thinking about this whole move and the four outfielders in a very optimistic, positive way. And going off of what Joel just said, you know, I trust Joe Maddon will find a way. You know, we said that last year when we had three catchers on the team. You know, he'll find a way. Eventually, we realized, they realized that's not going to work, and they traded Castillo away. Are we in a place right now where we just, no matter what Epstein and Maddon have to work with or what they do, we're just like, oh yeah, yeah, they'll make it work. It's good. It's good. It's fine. Like, are we looking at this through rose-colored glasses every single move now because of the team and where it is?
No, I don't think so. I mean, think about it. We're decrying the Coughlin move. I mean, the reality is you've got a guy in Jorge Soler, for as much as I kind of maligned him, that's the best bench bat in the league by far. So it's not about so much saying, oh, this is great, it's great. It is great. I mean, even if you make him a fourth outfielder, that's a positive thing. There are 25 guys on a roster.
That's a good point.
There's 40 guys on a roster. And Joe Maddon, more than anybody, he's going to utilize 12 or 13 offensive players. So the better your 9 through 12 or 13 players are, the better the team's going to be.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to turn that into a negative when you've got a guy who could be a starter on any other team as a fourth outfielder.
Well, and I think you have to look at it this way. At the end of the year, you're not going to be able to look at bottom line stats, especially the counting stats, and say, okay, here's how well this guy played, because the guys are going to get 400, 450 at bats rather than 600 in a lot of cases. So they're going to be set up to succeed. But they might have, you know, Jorge Soler might have 18 home runs than 24 or something like that. So you're just going to have to really look at it with a lot of context.
I'm kind of bummed that we won't see Hayward in center field. I wanted to see that play out.
I'm not convinced that Soler doesn't get traded.
Good point.
We were kind of emailing about that, or we're on Slack or something, and we were talking about, I think, Soler and Baez, and I know that high up in the organization, they love Javi Baez, and you know, everyone knows about his ceiling, and so in addition, and he's an amazing fielder. You know, like I was talking last week about his throw from short to home; it was 95 miles an hour. But I just know that they are in love with him as a person. I don't know that they feel that same way about Soler. I don't know that they don't, but you know,
so you don't know anything, Joel.
I don't not know. So, but I think that, you know, you would, if you look down the road, like what does a team need? And it's like, well, you never have enough pitching. And it's like, if Soler does, Isaac, although you mentioned that, like if he plays well, then they'll want to keep him. But maybe he'll play just well enough to be traded for a starting pitcher down the road. So I think that he, I've never gotten the sense that they were giving up on him as a trade chip. I do not think they will trade Baez, though.
pretty much agree with everything you just said, Joel. I think that especially with Fowler on the roster, there's a might actually trade him down the road.
Trade Fowler?
No, I mean Soler.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I was unclear. I think with Fowler on the roster, there's a much better chance that they may trade Soler by, you know, even just like a few weeks or by the end of spring training even.
Wow.
That's interesting, but I don't think this has anything to do with Fowler. I still think that whether or not Jorge Soler gets traded has more to do with Albert Almora, because Fowler is still just a stopgap for one more year as to where he's probably not going to be on the team in 2017. So by June, if we're, you know, in contention, which we should be, if we're in contention and Soler has value still, which I pray that he does, and Albert Almora has turned a corner and is playing really well in AAA, they're going to view him as the center fielder of the future. That's when I think Soler might get dealt, because of the fact that we've got our three outfielders then in Schwarber, Almora, and Hayward for the future. And then if we do need pitching at that point, that's where I think we might see a trade.
I think it's interesting, the whole idea of, you know, maybe he gets traded, maybe he still gets traded pretty quickly. Now, how much stock do you guys put into Theo Epstein saying, that's it, we're done, no more moves? Buy it, or is he just, you know?
I buy it for now. You know, I think maybe a month or two.
Define, we're done with moves.
Yeah, exactly. 24 hours. Exactly, right, exactly. Yeah, I think that if someone talks to them about Soler, they will definitely listen.
Yeah, I agree with that. And didn't they say that they were pretty much done unless something big, you know, came up? I feel like they're always pretty much done unless something big comes along, they'll make a move.
So do you guys think, just kind of switching gears here for a second, do you think that the addition of Fowler is something that makes a notable difference in this team's win projection? I mean, you're essentially replacing Fowler from Coughlin, and you know, you're giving Soler quite a few less at bats. I think that's irrefutable. Does that change the equation of this team? I think that it changes the dynamic of the team and the dynamic of the clubhouse. I think Fowler's probably your leadoff guy, although yeah, Ryan will touch on that later. But does it change this team's ability to win games?
I think one thing that definitely changes is you have Soler out there less and possibly Schwarber less, so maybe the defense gets a little bit better in the outfield.
Yeah.
I railed on that last week, which is why I was actually one of the reasons I was advocating for Coughlin. The first thing that I thought was awesome. I mean, our defense just went from definitely below average in the outfield to probably back above average. You've got one of the best in the game in the right field, probably the best. I think Fowler's average, and then below average in left. But overall, it's probably slightly above average now, and that's a big upgrade.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think that if we're going to talk about batting order later, then I don't want to steal the thunder. But I do think that solidifies your order too, because you were like, well, who's going to lead off? Are you going to Zobrist, Hayward? I heard every now and then people are like, well, what about Schwarber? So I think that everything was kind of up for grabs, and this solidifies the batting order certainly.
Have you guys seen that graph where it shows the potential range with Schwarber in the lineup? I don't know what to make of that, because I don't know what it looks like in comparison to other, you know, other teams. But what do you guys think?
I thought Schwarber's looked really, really small. It's a really small sample size, so it's not quite fair. But it became pretty clear to me that when you normalize the starting point for Schwarber, his range is pretty small. But Hayward's range in right is just enormous, which shows that he can both position and he has a lot of agility and speed, athleticism to get the ball. So the three of them looked decent. I mean, if you overlap it against Kansas City's or Pittsburgh's, it still doesn't compare. But right. Anytime you're going to have Schwarber and his limited range in there, that's going to be true.
Well, I also think that I already talked about the defense, but think of how Joe Maddon runs his teams, right? And he loves putting those defensive replacements in towards the end of the game. If it's a close game, you know, you got to treat every single game like a playoff game. That part of it, you just got a lot better, right? Like you have Fowler and you have Hayward, you can have Fowler and Hayward out there on the field at the same time, versus before this move, you know, who was that guy that you put into the outfield late in the game? Was it going to be Baez? Was it going to be Matt Caesar, who unfortunately we probably won't be talking about very much this season now? I don't know, but now it's way better.
Think about this. Think about this late inning. What if you put Zobrist in left and Baez at second, and then all of a sudden you've got Zobrist, Hayward, Fowler, or Fowler, Hayward, and then across the infield you've got Bryant, Russell, Baez, and Rizzo. That's a good defensive team for late innings. I love it.
Wow. That's pretty smart. I haven't thought of that. That's good.
I do like that quite a bit, actually.
You gave us pause, Isaac.
we're all taking
a sip of our brandy and swirling and thinking about the possibilities.
Does that buy you being nice to me for a week?
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe.
No.
Ryan,
what about it just because... Yeah, I hadn't thought about it just because I'd taken them at their word at the fact that Zobrist wanted to play second base and stay there, and they said that he pretty much was going to stay at second base unless really needed to move around.
I don't buy any of that. I think that was rhetoric because
I don't either.
Ben Zobrist takes pride in the fact. I played against him in high school once.
Whoa.
My brother, he's from Eureka, he's from my neighboring town. But he was quite a bit older than me. My brother played against him a couple of times, but he takes pride in his versatility.
Is Isaac big timing us?
I think maybe.
No, I was with his uncle. I was with his uncle tonight. I'm not even kidding. I think he takes pride in the fact that he's versatile, and he would get bored playing one position. He brings like six gloves to the park, so I think he wants to play a little bit of outfield too.
I don't know. I'm kind of intimidated. I don't really want to talk anymore because after you big timed us there, I'm just feeling too small.
I think I saw one at bat against him.
Famous you could talk about?
Boy, I quit. I think I quit every week.
Yeah. Or we get fired.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a really but you know is and I don't know this. I'm asking this out of. Is Zobrist that much of a step up over Schwarber? I mean, we're kind of treating Schwarber like he's, you know, as mobile as the Statue of Liberty there. I think he will improve some, but is Zobrist, you know, obviously not a natural left fielder. Is he going to be that much of a step up?
Huge. It's a huge step up.
Yeah? Okay.
That's the last time I'll reference Donald Trump, I promise.
That's good.
Who's this Trump? Is he on the White Sox?
I don't know that name.
Yeah. I don't know who that is.
Yeah. Well, you better get familiar with it.
All right. So I think you guys have anything else you want to talk about you know around Fowler's return? I know it has a lot of touches a lot of different parts of the team, but anything else that you guys want to cover on this?
I mean, I guess there's nothing really we can speak to in any sort of quantifiable way, but it just seems like. As far as a clubhouse guy, you know, he seems to be kind of the classic example. So I just like that. I like the continuity, and I like that. I think Madden will continue to keep the team on a positive track, and you know, he did last year and he will this year. But I think having Fowler back just boosts that even more.
So I guess the one last thing on this subject is. Who this pretty much solidifies who gets that last spot, the last bat on the roster, right? I mean, it's got to be Listella, right?
I think it does. And actually, I'm spoiling my piece for Tuesday that's coming out. But essentially, what this did is, since Coughlin is not coming off the bench anymore as a lefty, that doesn't leave any lefties on the bench. You've got Soler, Baez, Ross, and then it's Listella's job to lose. The only possible change I see from that is if Victorino can really reestablish himself as a switch hitter and then maybe beat him out. But I think this definitely means you're going to see a four-man bench and a very versatile bench with Listella and Baez over there. But Listella will be your first lefty off the bench, I think so.
It just depends on Victorino, in my opinion, what they see of him and what they think he can do. But, yeah, probably Listella.
Yeah, we were talking about the... him a little bit before the show, and I think Victorino maybe they just like his experience and the kind of intangible, you know, the fact that he's apparently a good clubhouse guy, but he's you're not bringing him for his offense, and you're not bringing him for his base running. So maybe, you know, theoretically, he would be the late inning defensive replacement, but I don't know, would that even be worthwhile? So I think maybe it's just a name, and like I said before, just maybe if you're catching lightning in a bottle, but probably not.
Keep in mind, too, with Victorino, that is a deal that was negotiated before the Fowler deal. So the Fowler deal probably negated the need to bring him aboard, but they just went ahead and honored it anyway, just because they're good guys, I guess. But they didn't have intentions of getting Fowler when they signed Victorino.
I don't necessarily buy that. I mean, I think if they probably the entire time had an idea that they had a chance to bring him back, I mean, they were just in constant contact with those guys.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. That I saw a statement that basically said, yeah, this was something we were talking about before we got Fowler, and we just decided to go ahead and honor it. So I don't know if you can take that at face value or not, but I thought it was an interesting quote.
All right, so last week we talked about kind of the players on the team that we each thought were a good barometer for the Cubs' success. If so-and-so did well, then the team is going to be in good shape. So let's take the opposite this week and do our blank worries me the most. Joel, let's start with you. Which player do you think, if he isn't doing well, you'll be concerned for this team?
Well, I guess I want to throw out a bunch of caveats. The name I'm going to give, I don't know that it
affects... Damn it, Joel, just pick a player.
I don't know that it affects the team necessarily, but I just worry about his... I guess, I don't know if career is a strong word, but my guy was Javier Baez, because, Isaac, I know you wrote a very thorough piece about how you were very optimistic that he'd changed his batting stance and his swing, and was going to become more of a contact guy and less of a, you know, trying to hit the 7-run homer. But, you know, I looked at we're dealing in a very small sample size here, but I looked at his last, you know, his last 14 games. That's would take into account this new approach. And he struck out 39%. Of the time, he walked twice and he had zero homers. I know you're going to be, if you're changing everything up, you're moving into a gray area, but he's 23, and I know that's young, but I just feel like maybe at a certain point, maybe the leopard has his stripes. Or spots, I guess. Whoops. Or whatever.
That's a sweet leopard.
Cows has his horns, something. You know, I think that maybe he is who he is. And I know players do change, but I just worry that that he's going to be kind of a all-or-nothing guy. And, you know, everyone loves him, as I was saying before, and he's great defensively, and he brings a lot to the table, enthusiasm and energy. But I just wonder if he is ever going to hit that ceiling that we hope, or maybe he's just kind of not, and maybe never quite be who we hope he is.
I just before we get into the next one, my only question there is, Javier Baez is a year younger than Jorge Soler. He's had about half the amount of plate appearances in the majors. He produced more value last year and a third the amount of plate appearances, or less actually, than Soler did. And he struck out right around the same percent of time as Soler did. And as you said, he brings a lot more in the other parts of the game. So I guess my question is why the exception for Soler and not for Baez as far as being a young player?
Look, Isaac, you and your numbers and your facts. I just go with my gut, man.
When did Dusty Baker join the podcast?
I mean, it was 80. It was 80 plate appearances, but he OPS plused 100, so he was league average, and you know, playing second base, shortstop, third base, providing a ton of value on the base pass. So, as a 22-year-old, the OPS plus 100 in a limited sample, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and you know, I hope I'm wrong, and I'm not positing that he is going to flame out, but I just, like I said, I just see those numbers. I see that huge swing, and I know you talked about how he's kind of toned down the swing, but it just worries me that he, you know, and everything you said makes sense about his age and being younger than Soler and You know, if he adjusts and great, and you know, I've heard people say. I remember when they were talking about him, like his ceiling, and people literally have said like Hall of Fame ceiling. So, you know, God.
Well, I think you know what, Joel, your caveat made a good point. You know, more about his career versus this Cubs season, and I'm curious from Isaac, from your point of view, like. Does this, the situation that he's in now, right, where he's going to be moving around the infield, maybe not so much the outfield now, but he's not going to start, you know, a lot of games. Maybe he will start a few games, but he's not a starter. Does that help him in his career? Or is that, like, the fact that he's going to be playing multiple positions, maybe that'll keep him kind of, whatever, it'll allow him to kind of focus on his hitting? Or does it hurt him? Does it help him? Like, what do you think?
I think that it probably hurts him overall. It's probably better for the team because I'm not sure he's quite ready to have a full-time starting mm-hmm. position. Yeah. But I think it probably hurts his development somewhat. But that being said, it's also a testament to the quality of player that he is, being that, you know, you're going to run him out there for, I'm just, you know, positing 300 to 400 at-bats, and you know he's going to provide value because of how versatile he is. So, on one hand, it's sort of a showcase of his talents, and on the other hand, yeah, you know, I'd like to see him be starting at third base. Again, my whole thing was I'd like to see him start at third and Bryant and right, but it's not going to happen, and I've resigned myself to that. So I guess to answer your question, I think it is a little bit of a drawback for his development, and that does worry me.
Hmm. All right. Well, let's Ryan, who do you have on this? Which player worries you the most for the Cubs season?
I'm just going out there with Jason Hayward. That's because I have nothing to back that up specifically. It's just, if he has a bad year, it's such a bad look and such kind of a step backwards for the organization. There's nothing I have specifically that says he's going to have a bad year. It's just, you know, I that's my concern. Let's say he goes out and gets hurt real early, or he has a really, really, really slow start, or you know, just has a down year where he just doesn't look good at all in the field, or maybe whatever they're doing with his batting stance changes something. I don't know. I can't give you anything specific on it. Just the basis of what we're talking about. If he has a bad year, that's really concerning for the team.
Wow, that's actually a really good point, and I think it's very valid that there's nothing we can really point to say, hey, this is a concern of what could go wrong. But even think about it. Think about if he's injured for a couple of months or something. I think you made a really good point in that he was sort of the apogee of our offseason, right, where we thought, wow, this could happen. And if he does not play well, you're right. That could tank us fairly fast just from a psychological standpoint.
Well, I mean, I guess I don't mean to, you know, I know we're all just going on intuition here, but I mean, his on-base percentage over the last 4 years average is 348. You know, I just feel like he will just be what he is, you know, like just, I think his fielding will always be there and he will always be a contact hitter. And so I know we're just throwing stuff out there. So I'm optimistic that he will. But you know, I guess this is a topic I'd like to get to at some other point. But you know, Carlos, I remember talking to you a year or two ago, and we were talking about all these phenoms that the Cubs have. You know, that when they had Bryant and so in the minors, Bryant and Soler and Baez and Almora, and you're like, not all of them are going to succeed. But if you look at it, like all of their good players are in the mix now. There's no flame out. There's you know, Baez and Soler are the only ones on the periphery, but you've got Schwarber, you've got Bryant, you've got Russell. And so this is opening up, you know, a can of worms here that we could maybe get to another time, but someone is not, Theo Epstein himself has said that progress is not linear. So someone is not going to just keep improving. And I guess I'm wondering who that is, but you know, we don't have to get into that now. But it's just something to think about.
That's juicy, Joel. Let's save it for next week.
Okay, there we go. Topic number one.
No.
Isaac, who's your player?
This is tough. It's an extremely deep team, but I think the obvious one here is a guy that collected almost 9 wins above replacement last year, and you have to go with Jake Arrieta, because if Jake Arrieta either snaps his elbow off from the slurve that Ryan Davis is such a fan of, or if he decides that he wants to just go into professional being awesomeness, I think it really could hurt this team, because you've got Arrieta, who was a 9-win pitcher last year and really just carried us in the second half. And then you've got Lester, who's going to be solid. He's kind of your Jason Hayward of the pitching staff. Beyond that, though, John Lackey's 36 years old. He could implode any time. Jason Hamill was a dumpster fire in the second half. Kyle Hendricks throws 81, and you never know. So if Arrieta, I'm more worried about him getting hurt than any sort of serious regression in his ability. His bottom line stats are not going to be as good, but ability regression is what he can handle. I don't think that's going to happen, but if he were to get hurt, or if something were to happen there, if he struggled, if he went through a bout, I think it could really set this team to a place they didn't expect to be in.
I completely. If Lester gets hurt, even if it's not necessarily Arrieta, Lester, if you're relying on Jason Hamill and Kyle Hendricks to be really good for your team to win, I'm not saying they can't, but that's a scary position to be in for a team that's expected to be one of the best teams in baseball, to be relying on guys who, one of them couldn't stop giving up home runs and couldn't get his slider to bite, and the other one, can't go through a lineup the third time. They've done better with the rotation depth, but if Travis Wood and Trevor Cahill and Adam Warren are all in the rotation, that's kind of a scary thought.
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, I almost, Isaac, when you were talking about like area getting hurt, I started to get this queasy feeling in my stomach. I was like, oh shit.
Start sweating a little.
Yeah, and it's funny because like Cubs, you Derek Lee talked about it, Dusty Baker talked about it, Lou Piniella talked about it, like all the pressure. And I know that this new regime, that they're all about, this is the Cub way. Isn't that what they called it? Like, this is a new, we're going to do things in a completely different way. The whole lovable losers thing, that's gone. The whole curse, which is, I never bought that for a second, but this is a new team. We're a bunch of professionals. We do things well. But when you said that, you can just imagine like the psyche of a Cubs fan being like, it's all going to crumble and fall apart and they're going to suck. And a friend of mine was at, I want to say it was game 3 of the 2007 playoffs. And I think it was that at Wrigley Field, and they had lost the first 2 games. And then the first batter, Chris Young, is it the leadoff guy for the Diamondbacks? The first batter on the first pitch hit a home run.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine was at the game. He said the place got dead silent. And he's like, you knew that they were going to lose as soon as that happened. And so I think that, like, if Arrieta were to, tweak his shoulder, in the first month, everyone would be like, oh, there it is. Bottom's falling out. We're done.
Yeah, the thing that you got to think about here is any team that has a guy that's as brilliant as Arrieta, if you lose him, it's going to sting really bad. But when you talk about trades, if Jake Arrieta goes down in the first half, then if it's a serious injury, I would bet a lot of money that Jorge Soler or maybe Javier Baez, one of them is going to get traded for a frontline starting pitcher. So there you go. There's a scenario where I can definitely see a trade of Soler.
Yeah. And to kind of add on to what Joel said, that's kind of where I am with Hayward and why I said I don't really have anything to back up why I would be scared about him getting hurt or having a terrible year. It's just kind of that expectation of when something goes wrong, it all goes wrong. And that's, I guess, kind of ingrained into being a Cubs fan, I think. But for your example, I was at Game 2 of the NLDS in 2008, coming off of the sweep and 2007, and then blowing that lead in game 1 with the grand slam, and the tension in the building was so thick, and everybody was just waiting for something to go wrong, and then when it did, it was just kind of this, oh, there it goes again.
Yeah.
Gonna get swept again. I talked to so many, nobody at in the middle of the game. Nobody expected to win. It would go to Los Angeles and win any games. I mean, it's really kind of a mutton.
So my pick is Hector Rondon. I want to say, like you guys, that that I don't have anything to go off of, but really what I'm thinking is Madden was, I felt kind of quick to pull him from the start, from the closer's role last year. And I don't know, you know, bullpens are so volatile that if this happened, if volatility struck him and he went from what he was last year to something way worse than that, you know, maybe Strope can come in and out, it would just be brutal.
Yeah, it would be tough, and I think I was on record last week saying that he worried me a little bit. There's something about the way Hector Rondon approaches his appearances that worries me. I do think that the best option for the late innings would be Justin Grimm, actually, as long as everyone's healthy. But I agree with you. That bullpen pretty quickly could suddenly look like there wasn't a go-to guy. That is a scenario that if Rondon isn't there, we may struggle to have a guy that we feel like is lights out.
Yeah, and that happened kind of last year, too. Sorry, go ahead, Joel.
Well, I was just, I mean, so if something does happen, then who is your closer? I don't even know.
I think it's Justin Grimm, Peter. But
hopefully we won't have to find out.
Yeah.
Who are we visiting with in our 60 seconds with a former Cub this week, Joel?
We're going to go back in the time machine to the days of Michael Barrett, another catcher. So give me the intro, the tick, 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 and I'll get it started.
Ready?
Think of Michael Barrett. Go. You think of what? Him punching the doughy-faced and frosted tips of A.J. Pruszynski.
Yes!
But Barrett actually put together a few good years for the Cubs, too. Jim Hendry had put together a trade for him on the back of a bar napkin, probably, and gotten Barrett for fellow backstop Damian Miller in 2004. That year, Barrett hit 16 homers with 65 RBIs, led the team in triples and sacrifice flies. The next year, Barrett again hit 16 homers, had 61 RBIs, posted an OPS of 824, and won the Silver Slugger Award. But something was amiss with him. Barrett freaked out on Roy Oswalt a couple times, got into it with Carlos Zambrano in 2007, which ended up with Barrett going to the hospital. He also had a heated debate with another Cubs pitcher, Rich Hill, that same year. Barrett was traded to the Padres in 2007, his last season in 2009, when he had a mere 19 plate appearances with Toronto. He's since become part of the Washington Nationals, managing the Gulf Coast League for 2 years, and he's now working as the team's minor league catching coordinator. Ding. And here's some Michael Barrett trivia, by the way.
Well done.
Do you know what he said to Pruszynski right before he decked him?
I would love to know.
He said, "I didn't have the ball, bitch."
Wow.
And then the puncher around the world.
That's exactly like something Michael Barrett would say.
That was a great moment.
I mean, AJ had it coming to him from several people. Oh. So.
Oh, I mean, he was the most hated guy in baseball. So.
And he's still playing.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. I don't think there was a single person in baseball who was upset about that.
No.
Now we just need, well, I guess I can't say this since he's now a Cub. I was going to say, you know, before last year we just needed Lackey and Pruszynski to get into a fight.
Yeah. The world would explode in on itself.
Swallow itself like a black hole.
Who do you root for?
Very good.
Who do you root for in that battle?
Well, because he's a Cub. Yeah. Well, yeah, and you know, it's funny. It's you remember when the Bulls had John Starks for a while? It's like you're forced to root for a guy who you once hated. It's like, oh, no, it's okay. But inside, you're like, rah, 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 you know.
What were you like inside?
We can't do it again, Carlos. That was Haley's comment there. That's never again.
I'll just edit it in again like you said it. I'll just copy and paste it.
Joel's groveling.
Yeah. Michael Barrett, this, try to get your Expos references in, because he's one of the few that still, well, he's not around anymore, but he played with the Expos back in the day.
At some point, I would love to do a deep dive into their outfield. I have that Jonah Carey book, actually. I can't remember, the title is escaping. He actually sent me a signed copy. He will do that. He's like the nicest guy. If you email him, he'll send you a signed copy.
Wait, are we all big-timing on this episode? I'm confused.
Yes, I emailed with Jonah Carey. That's about as big as it gets. But the, remember the Expos outfield? I mean, you had Warren Cromarty and Andre Dawson and Tim Raines, and they had just so much talent. Tim Wallach, Gary Carter, Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez. It's crazy. So their scouts obviously knew something.
Back on Barrett, wasn't he a third baseman when he first came up with the Expos?
He was. You're right.
I'm confused. Okay, this is a Cubs podcast, and yet...
That's what I thought.
I'm convinced that Joel was first a Cincinnati Reds fan, second a Montreal Expos fan, and third maybe liked the Cubs a little, sort of, maybe.
You know, I just appreciated the Expos for their brilliance. It was like... and yet they never won, you know? Weren't they the best team in baseball by dozens of games the year of the strike? And
they were dominant that year.
Yeah. So sad.
Not for us. Maybe for you. Stat of the week.
Take us into stat of the week.
Stat of the week. This week's stat of the week is isolated slugging, also known as ISO. Essentially what ISO does is tries to tell you in one stat how many extra base hits a player averages per at-bat. It reads just like average. A good ISO is about 200. A bad ISO is anything under 100. All you have to do to figure it is actually take the slugging percentage and take the batting average out of the slugging percentage. So you're essentially taking the singles out of the slugging percentage. So the reason why that's important is because it tells you in one handy little stat without having to do any tricky math, it tells you the quality of a player's batting average and their slugging. So if you take someone like Ben Revere, who hit about 316 in 2014 and he slugged 377 or 361 actually, his ISO was a whopping 55. But Miguel Cabrera, on the other hand, hit 313 that year and he slugged 524, so his ISO was 211. Gives you an idea why batting average is no longer viewed as the holy grail. So that's isolated slugging. It is slugging minus batting average.
So who is the king of ISO on the Cubs?
It's probably going to be Chris Bryant because of the fact that he doesn't put the ball in play all that much, so his batting average isn't going to be that high, but he's always going to hit a ton of home runs, a ton of extra base hits.
Makes sense.
It's just fun to say, ISO.
ISO.
What's your ISO?
ISO, baby. That was really useful. That was very helpful. Thank you.
Good. I'm glad I could help you.
I found this educational.
That sounded kind of confrontational. It was good. Good. Fine.
For once, your stat of the week was useful.
I'd like to subscribe to your newsletter.
Okay. But the thing you got to keep in mind about ISO is it's not it takes a long time to normalize. So you really only want to judge somebody's ISO for about a year's worth of stats. You get to 500 or 550 plate appearances is when you can really start taking it seriously.
That was way better than BABIP.
Okay, I liked BABIP. I'm sorry.
I was just butchering the pronunciation to make fun of Joel.
I was wondering.
Carlos, your words, they hurt.
They were meant to, Joel.
Oh, that's good.
So I heard that we got like 17 emails to pick from this week for our question of the week, Ryan. Is that right?
It was like 70, actually.
Wow. Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Melting the servers,
there's
guys.
There's tons
Thank
of people.
You.
Yeah, it's been killing my audio, actually. Yeah.
That's what's doing it.
The one I decided to pick this week comes from... kind of a friend of the podcast, I guess. Miss Aris Rex at Missy KBM, and her question is: with Dex back, Dex all in caps. Who do you like in the leadoff spot, Dex or Jason Hayward? And I'm going against the grain on this. I go by the kind of the new book theory on leadoff, which is a guy who gets on base and hits for. Dexter Fowler, the guy who strikes out a little bit more. So that's my theory behind it. Both of them are pretty good at getting on base, about the same kind of rate. So that's my theory.
You're going with Hayward over Fowler?
Yeah, Hayward over Fowler. I think I know you guys pretty much all disagree with that, but I'd be interested in hearing what you guys think.
I think that my pick is Fowler purely from the standpoint of I like the what it does for the rest of the lineup.
Yeah.
I think Fowler's fairly prototypical leadoff hitter except for the strikeouts, but he counteracts that just by walking a ton. He walked 84 times last year, so I still like Fowler up there because he draws so many walks and he steals bases. His on base is almost identical to Hayward's the last couple of years, so I think I'm still there. I love Hayward as a two-hole hitter. I also like him in the sixth spot. Thoughts?
Yeah, I like the continuity of having Fowler. I mean, he's back. It's like, all right, it's Fowler. We can keep part of the lineup and the team that was there last year and kind of carry that over. So yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, he was new to the team last year and he got off to such a bad start that kind of left a bitter taste in people's mouths. But he's going to get on base, and that's what we need. So I like him in the leadoff spot.
I also like that he switch hits. So the pitcher's always going to be facing the opposite hand initially to start. I like that. So it puts a little bit more pressure on that pitcher right from the get-go.
All interesting
points. My pick was going to be David Ross. I think David Ross should lead off.
G-Bob Rossi.
That's a good call.
Yeah, I like that. Maybe give it to him at least once.
I think that's a good idea.
Like when Soler let off last year, that was amazing.
God, I don't even remember that. I know.
I don't either.
I know Schwarber did, but I had to look that up because I didn't remember that at all either. But apparently Schwarber did. I don't remember Soler doing it at all.
Yeah, Soler did one game, and Madden's reasoning was essentially that he looked it up, and I think Soler had been in every other spot but that. So he's like, oh, I got to lead him off once. The guy's a little bit crazy.
So he'd have something to talk about during the press conference after the game.
Exactly.
You know, I was just looking up the numbers here. I was kind of intrigued by the whole Hayward versus Fowler leadoff. And the strikeouts, it's not even close. Fowler struck out 154 times compared to 90 for Hayward. And Hayward's on-base percentage is .359 compared to .346 for Fowler. But then there is the walks. Hayward had 56 walks to 84 for Fowler. So... but if you're just going on, you know, the strikeouts, that number, I didn't realize that was such a huge discrepancy there. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, you're kind of making my case for me, I guess, why I would go with Hayward first and then Fowler. And the new book on lineup creation, it says on base and contact first and then strikeout second.
Yeah, I don't think that's unfair, but... I think that the strikeouts are far secondary to the on base. And if you look at Fowler's three previous years, he was over 369 every year before that. So I guess I believe in his ability to get on base at least as well or maybe a little bit better than Hayward's. And to Carlos's point, the continuity is interesting to me there because of that, I just like the way it stacks up because of that continuity and the fact that Fowler's been a leadoff hitter pretty much his whole career. It just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I was thinking just intuitively. I was like, well, I figure that their stats are somewhat similar, but just for some reason, it seemed to make sense. You know, just like the continuity, I guess, like Carlos said.
So, Missy Soros, I guess your answer is we completely disagree, and we're going to scream at each other as soon as we can.
Yeah, it's going to be fisticuffs.
Yeah. So I know the question kind of phrased it between those two players, but is there anybody else that you guys see as a potential leadoff candidate other than Hayward and Fowler?
No, not really for me. That's
pretty much it, right?
I mean, I think everybody knows that Zobrist could do it, but yeah, I think with Fowler and Hayward both, who's your third option probably, right?
Yeah. That was the name that I was going to throw out there too. But I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I've seen that when he has let off in the past that he has struggled. So maybe it's just not meant to be.
I think it's fair to call this episode the Dex episode. Dexter Fowler's back.
Let's talk about Dex.
Yeah, let's... I petition that we just make the name of this episode just Dex in all caps with an exclamation point.
SEO, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Make sure to rate us on iTunes. I think we have one review right now. We need to get some more reviews up there. You can submit for the question of the week on Twitter. We're at BP Wrigleycast. You can also email us at bpwrigleycast@baseballprospectus.com.
Good night.
All right, good night, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Right. See ya.